Welcome to Behold and Become, a podcast about faith with me, Robert Black. I hope that you all are doing well. No, I am not bringing back Behold and Become on a permanent basis, but as I mentioned, from time to time, I will be releasing some content as I'm able to. There was a conversation on Reddit not too long ago about podcasts in the Anglican and Episcopal world, and someone mentioned Behold and Become as a recommendation, and one person mentioned to me how much they appreciated the series that I did a year or two ago in Advent, taking a look at the Advent characters. Well, this Holy Week, all of the sermons that I am preaching are focusing in on one character in each sermon. And here at my parish, we do a very robust Holy Week. We have lots of liturgies. And so there are 9 sermons that I'm preaching this week. One of them is the Easter Vigil. And so it doesn't quite focus in on just one character, but there are the eight other sermons, though, really sort of consider the events of Holy Week through just one character on each day. So in a similar vein to that Advent series I did a couple of years ago, I thought that this Holy Week series on the characters of this week might be of interest to you all. So I will be sharing those sermons on this podcast feed as they are preached and become available. But know that I appreciate your listening and look forward to continuing to release episodes and series from time to time when I am able to. Hope that you all have a blessed Holy Week.
Gracious God, help us to look upon the cross and see the love that makes all things well. Amen. This Holy Week, the sermons have all been focusing on one character each day. By focusing on the very real people of Holy Week, we find our place within the great drama of our salvation that unfolds this week. On Good Friday, we fix our attention on Jesus. Theologian James Cone has said that the cross of Jesus Christ has a terrible beauty. The cross is the most horrific of things, as it is an instrument of humiliation, pain, brutality, and death. As we heard the prophet Isaiah say, just as there were many who were astonished at him, so marred was his appearance beyond human semblance, and his form beyond that of mortals. Look into the psychological and physical aspects of crucifixion, and your stomach will turn. Indeed, the cross is terrible, and yet it is also the most beautiful of all images. For in the cross of Jesus, we see the truth that God will survive our sins and our failings. The cross becomes the place of Jesus' glorification and salvation. This beauty is why the cross has stood at the center of our iconography and faith for 2 millennia. The beauty and the grandeur of God's love are amazing and wonderful. There is no issue with that. But why the terrible part of the cross? Could not God have dealt with sin and death in some other way? Sort of like how the rainbow is a sign of God's mercy after the flood. Couldn't God have given us a new symbol for our forgiveness? Could not the Eternal One who created all things overcome the power of the grave in a less terrible way? To be clear, those questions are above my pay grade. You would have to speak directly with God for a response. It could be, though, that a less transactional line of questioning might be helpful. When Christians think about the cross, so often we think in terms of what the cross does, that through it, sin is atoned for and death is defeated. And I believe that that is true with every fiber of my being. But I am not sure that that's the only thing that the cross means. Because more than how it functions at a theological level, The cross also reveals something on a very practical level. Put another way, the terribleness of the cross is not simply an unfortunate detail in the process of our salvation, but rather there is a deeply important and holy truth in that something so terrible can also at the same time be so very beautiful. The cross shows us that God and suffering go together. Our God is not an Olympian, a deity who is unmoved or uninterested in the affairs of humanity. God is not unable to experience pain or death, but rather there is something about the nature of God that is deeply compatible and resonant with suffering. One author speaks about the suffering of the cross as something like a recently fallen tree. When we look at it, we might notice a very dark ring and think, well, that's the scar from where the axe cut into it. But the reality is that ring runs all the way up and down the tree. Suffering was not something that God dealt with for 3 hours one Friday morning outside the walls of Jerusalem. No, suffering and God are not opposites, which means that in our suffering, God is not absent and hope is always well founded. Earlier in Holy Week, Jesus points us to this truth. Now, as far as we know, Jesus never gave a systematic theology lecture about the cross. But he did offer us a short parable to help us see the cross through his eyes. Jesus said, "Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." Through death, new life comes. Through suffering, redemption becomes possible. The worst thing becomes the place of grace. The terrible is seen as beautiful. In 2019, journalist Anderson Cooper sat down to interview Stephen Colbert. And it is an incredibly powerful interview. I would recommend that you go home and find the clip online and watch it. Cooper's mother had recently died, and the interview begins by him thanking Colbert for a letter that he wrote him. Now, Colbert comes from a big family. He is the 10th of 11 children. When he was a child, Colbert's father and the two brothers closest to him in age died in a plane crash. It was a terrible tragedy that changed the course of his life. Speaking about this, Colbert said, "There isn't another timeline where this tragedy did not happen. And the bravest thing you can do is to accept with gratitude the world as it is." Cooper is visibly moved and barely able to get the question out without choking up. He asks, "In an interview, you said that you have learned to love the thing that you most wish would not have happened. You went on to say, what punishments of God are not gifts? Do you really believe that?" Colbert responds, smiling compassionately, "Yes, it is a gift to exist, and with existence comes suffering. There is no escaping that. I don't want that plane crash to have happened, but gratitude is for the whole of life. Suffering leads us into a deeper love, which is about the fullness of humanity. It's not about being the best human, but the most human. Tragedy gave me the gift of being more fully human." Or in other words, the worst thing became the foundation for grace. Just as is true when we suffer, or have a loved one die, it is terrible. But there is a gift that comes along with the suffering, and it's not as if the gift is a consolation prize or a byproduct. The gift is the main thing, just as being fully human is the main thing. It's just that the road to get there is the way of the cross. There is no shortcut to this gift that goes around suffering. the terrible and worst thing becomes the beautiful place where grace springs from. Another cultural example that points us towards this truth comes from a recent documentary about Michael J. Fox called Still. Remember back to the 80s, Fox was one of the biggest actors in the world. He had won 5 Emmys, 4 Golden Globes, 2 SAGs, and 1 Grammy. He was, in the eyes of many, on top of the world. But at age 29, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. For 7 years, he hid his diagnosis. He would hide the tremors in his left hand on the movie sets by making sure he was always holding something or doing something with that hand. Fox says, "Actors do not become actors because they are brimming with self-confidence. An actor's burning ambition is to spend as much time as possible pretending to be somebody else." And so when he could not hide this illness and could no longer depend on acting to assuage his feelings of inadequacy, he turned to alcohol and dopamine pills, which he says he popped like candy to manage the stress and the symptoms. After one particularly bad night, he woke up terribly hungover, and his wife, a movie star in her own right, Tracy Pollan, asked him, "Is this the life you want?" He said no, and began the journey towards healing. Fox says that the first year of honesty and sobriety was brutal, but he's thankful for all of it. One way to tell the story of Michael J. Fox is through the lens of the theology of the cross, to apply that logic shared by Stephen Colbert. What punishments are not gifts? Fox says if it were not for his Parkinson's, he would probably be divorced and either dead, in jail, or rehab. It's not that he would have ever chosen to have Parkinson's, but he says that the reason why he still has his wife and kids is because of this disease. The very one that will kill him is what saved him. So often the thing that we wish would not have happened is the very thing that saves us. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. The worst thing becomes the place of grace. From the cross, Jesus recites the first verse of Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me?" In the Jewish tradition, by quoting one part of a psalm, you evoke the meaning of the whole thing. So when Jesus quotes that first verse, testifying to the worst thing, he is also calling to mind the final verse of grace. "They shall come and make known to a people yet unborn the saving deeds he has done." Through the terrible forsakenness of the cross, the grace of God was made known to a people yet unborn, a people that includes you and me. God saves us not from hardship, but through it. One preacher has said that what God gives us is maximum support and minimum protection. Maybe we would like to adjust that balance a little bit to have some more protection. But that is not the world we live in. Suffering is the price of love. C.S. Lewis tells us that to love is to be vulnerable. Anytime we open ourselves to the beautiful power of love, we are also opening ourselves to the terrible consequences of sin and death. Lewis says that the only way to protect against such suffering is to lock our heart away, to let our heart become cold, hardened, and lifeless. Love and suffering are not opposites, but they are what it means to be made fully human in the image of God. James Cone, who I mentioned earlier, notes that suffering is the inevitable fate of those who stand up to the forces of hatred. In other words, if we are going to be a people of justice, mercy, and compassion, then we will encounter suffering as the pushback from hatred, division, and indifference. The worst thing becomes the place where hope, grace, and resurrection come from. The love which made Jesus suffer is as much greater than his pain as heaven is greater than earth. So says Julian of Norwich. The cross of Jesus declares for all the world to see and know that things which have been cast down are being raised up, and things which have grown old are being made new, and that all things are being brought to their perfection and made well by him through whom all things were made, Jesus Christ. Love is stronger than death. Mercy is more enduring than sin. Peace perseveres more than division. Hope is more real than our fears. Grace redeems the worst thing. On Good Friday, Jesus shows us the grain of the universe, which runs alongside the grain of the hard wood of the cross. Jesus helps us to come to love the things that we most wish would not have happened, because in the terrible, we receive the gift of deep and redeeming beauty of grace.